So when you talk, when one reads the phrase more than an artistic problem, we're talking about the political, we're talking about the cultural, and there's the question, does poetry by itself do anything in our time?
Well, it got us to Seattle.
And Vancouver.
Yeah, yeah. Living large. Well, Juliana, I'm going to put you on the spot. But I think Juliana's more optimistic that it does. Well, it certainly does. It's a different question being an American poet than I think it would be in different times and different places where the poetry has a... can have a certain kind of effect and role that it's increasingly hard to imagine in the States for a variety of reasons.
Dana Gioia says it's because the poetry is too complex. Or, I mean, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it. But I mean, we need to write like Ted Kooser, I guess, is the answer.
Yeah, and that's not really working out for Ted Kooser, though.
Yeah, I mean, the difference between having...
How so?
Well, I mean, Ted Kooser, I mean, he does... He can probably get himself to Seattle, and he could probably get paid a lot more, too. Because we got zero, but but there's a way in which it'd be hard pressed to say like that Ted Kooser's work is actually doing something in the world finally, other than being poetry, which is not necessarily a kind of bad thing. I mean, I think the answer is, I mean, what was your question again?
It's going something more than an artistic problem. And so, I mean, you read the book and you get this critique of capitalism. We get graphic descriptions of ostensibly the kinds of things that are happening to people physically from in a capitalist society. Mm-hmm. So can poetry do anything? And is that part of what you're trying to do? And you're not writing poetry, although George Stanley says this is a prose poem. That's what he says.
That's so sweet. Writers like to say that writing can do something, and they write about it all the time because they're writers. And so, like, there's a long history of writing, of people saying that writing can do things. The most recent articulation of it was like in the language poets, in which they say things like, "We'll tear apart the syntax, right?" And then we'll do that. Those claims have felt not relevant in this time. Finally, the thing that I don't want to totally dismiss at these moments, my line would be the thing that poetry is like, we kind of have this formulation that I've been using in this other project I've been working on with Jasper and Joshua, where we keep saying poetry is like the riot dog. It's the barking dog that exists beside things. It doesn't do anything political on its own, but it is both something that kind of gets its influences from moments, let's say the riot at that moment, and something that kind of exists as a parallel beside it, even though it doesn't really incite. But the thing that I don't want to do in those moments is, for a long time, like, decolonization moments have insisted that cultural products are important parts of decolonization. And they insist on that because they hold, like, poetry or writing holds language in it, and language is seen as an important part of a kind of identity that is often, like, imposed from outside during colonialism. And so, like, one of the ways that you recapture your colonized culture is through cultural products, is one of the ways, you know, also through armed resistance and overthrow of the government in some way. And I don't want to, there's a part of me that doesn't want to take my first world lifestyle in which poetry doesn't really have, you know, is there at its best, smally barking and maybe chihuahua style, and kind of dismiss the importance that these kind of anti-colonial movements have put on it and have used it in really interesting ways.
And even in the state, I mean, maybe less so now because it's become so codified in fairly less interesting ways, but the sort of identity, the poetry and cultural production that comes out of identity sort of based social movements in the, Harlem Renaissance, but certainly in the 60s and 70s out of feminism, queer liberation projects, and where it's not just sort of like now my story can be read alongside the dominant, you know, story of straight white men that has dominated, you know, of the West, Western, you know, notions of capital P poetry and art, but also experimenting with different forms of language and attention, right? So, for instance, in the Bay Area in the 60s and certainly in the 70s and 80s, there's a sort of what's called the La Raza poetry movement. These are poets that, you know, they're interested in beat poetry, but also, you know, sort of leftist Latin American poetry, and they're also involved in, you know, some of them are going down to Nicaragua in 79 and starting cultural organizations in the Mission District. And those are also, I think, places where, not to romanticize it, but where you can go back and see the way that poets and poetry was really wrapped up and more organically part of these other social movements. Again, not to necessarily say, like, then, you know, the poetry book is the one that gets everyone riled up and, you know, more than, I don't know, economic conditions or you know, other sorts of things. But, I mean, and the other thing I'd hold out is that, I mean, different kinds of poetry can also, you know, there are places for alternative forms of history and memory. So if we think, if it's a question of, like, can poetry do something, like, I can write something, put it out in the world, and then it will have a tangible effect that we call political, and anything other than that we say is not political, right? That's, you know, that's a somewhat limiting if we also think about things that create or try to articulate, you know, different forms of historical memory, which might be of the, you know, of the quote-unquote of the tribe, or it could be of, you know, certain moments. And, you know, those can be, you know, cliche, cheesy, over-romanticized, you know, nostalgic in ways that I don't, you know, find terribly useful, etc. But I think that there's something there, too, that that I find interesting. I mean, I can just, you know, I mean, I would go back to, I mean, there's books that I read, poetry that I read that sort of to learn history, that I find really useful. And then, of course, you know, studying leftist and sort of cultural political history is also a way of thinking about the contemporary, right? It's not just now I know something about 1968, but it's now I can think differently about my present moment if I remember that the, you know, there are other ways of thinking about the past. You know, so poetry can do that kind of work. But yeah, certainly I think the book is trying to think through that and burlesque to some degree the sort of pratfalls of poets who, despite that pessimism, if not outright cynicism, try to forge on. These days, if we say, at least in Oakland, like after Occupy, I mean, then you know, the questions change a little bit because it's sort of like, well, can your poetry be political? This is a stupid way of phrasing the question, but like, can your poetry be political if you didn't also go out in the streets, right? Or something like that, right? Which I would say, like, certainly, like,
armchair activist.
Yeah, but I mean, also, like, I could go into the streets and be, and my poetry could suck, right? Like, it doesn't guarantee my work any more political, other than I would like to think that those experiences will bring in new contents and questions to the work, even if, again, it's after the fact or upon reflection, and, you know.